There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Phone number, same as it's been for 17 years now. But if you're new, here, jot this down or put it in your contacts. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106 for a call or a text. And in addition, you can always leave a talkback message using the FM Talk 106.5 app. All right, mentioned joining us this hour. It's good as we'll get the state of the bay from my buddy and executive director at Mobile Baykeeper, William Strickland, joining us now. Thanks for your time.
Oh, always happy to come on, Sean. Thank you for having me. It's been too long.
It has been too long. And before we get into like our issues here locally and kind of an update, and it's a good time, May, you know, even though like the water, I don't know, for me is important 365 days a year, but a lot of people become re-engaged once it warms up enough to get in it. Before that, you and I were talking during the news break, and I finished up last hour saying that Ted Turner, but there's a lot of discussion about Ted Turner, but the thing that he won in my book is using that big paycheck or those big paychecks to acquire, I think as his passing, he owns 2 million acres in the United States. A quote I read from him, he said, "I acquired more land because I required more land. I wanted it. I'd never like to buy anything except land. It's the only thing that lasts." Preach, Ted Turner.
Oh, absolutely. And not only did he buy it, he restored it.
Yes.
Turned it into something better. He created habitat. And man, that is something that I admire. When I was a Boy Scout, you know, Philmont Camp out in New Mexico, I think his property borders it. So we had these rumors that he was going to introduce grizzly bears back to it or something. Anyway, it was this legend of Ted Turner. One of the earliest memories for me of a guy who wanted to restore the land and make things how they ought to be.
By the way, too, I'll call you later on. I didn't, years knowing you, didn't know you were a Philmonter as well. So watch talk about Philmont.
There's absolutely.
A group of us
I'm
here.
I'm an Eagle Scout, Sean.
Yeah,
I'm
we all had Eagle Scout, so. And y'all had your event last night too. Well, that's a whole other story. My buddy John Sharp is as well. And if it wasn't for what did Dad say, girls and cars. I would have made Eagle. Girls,
that's
I was
a
that close.
Distraction.
Girls and cars. I think it maybe said trucks or damn trucks. I would have made Eagle. But, all right. But yeah, the Ted Turner, the restoration thing, and people could read about it. I think probably people become re-engaged with his passing. But yeah, to have the money to buy the property and then go, you know what? I'm just crazy and the wild card enough that I'm going to restore bison on this place. And I'm not going to put them in a 200-acre enclosure. I'm going to restore bison. I'm going to keep the populations right. I'm going to allow people to hunt at a certain level, you know, to be able to continue the funding for this. I'm going to restore native trout. I'm going to do the same thing down, you know, in my stuff in the South. Not only is it going to be a quail plantation, but I'm going to have habitat for every darn critter that uses a longleaf forest. And I got the bank account to do it. This is just dream stuff.
Yeah, he put his money where his mouth is and didn't wait on the government to step in to fix it, which I think more people can do as well, while advocating for our governments to step in and fix it, which Ted also did.
For sure. All right, well, let's talk about us and here back home. I said the State of the Bay. I never called it that before, but, like, give me where do we sit now in May of 2026, the health of the whole system, the Bay and the Delta and all that. Are we better off than we were a year ago? Are we neutral? Are we worse? Kind of, could you, that's ham-fisted, but could you do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll of course preface it first by saying we're talking about a huge system that's so multifaceted, and there's so many different things harming water quality that it's a complex question, obviously, right? As you look at it from, is the community taking responsibility for the water, however, I would say we're definitely better off than we were a year ago. We may not be seeing some of the effects of our actions yet, but some things to name, and we have not talked since the state legislation passed to ban mud dumping in Mobile Bay. And for those of you that followed along, the Army Corps of Engineers is tasked with keeping our 50-foot deep ship channel open so that these big ships can come in and we can keep our economy going. But what the Corps of Engineers chose to do is to dispose of this dredge material, this mud, directly into the estuary to the tune of about 4.5 million cubic yards every year, which is an immense amount of mud. And over the past 2 years, the community rose to the occasion and has asked our elected officials to do something about it. And so we were able to get a state law passed that requires 70% of this mud to be used beneficially. That could be used for restoration. It could be used for construction. But it defines specifically that it is not beneficial to just dump it in the estuary. And so effectively, if enforced, this would ban mud dumping in Mobile Bay. So that's a big win for us as a community. And then furthermore, Senator Katie Britt has met that state law with the funding necessary to make it happen. So she got us $34 million this year and next year that will give the Army Corps of Engineers the funding they need to dispose of dredge material properly. But I will say there's more work to be done for her to continue that funding year over year because we want to have this ship channel for a long time. What we're asking her to do is to pass a provision in what's called the Water Resources Development Act of 2026, which should happen this fall, where she will be able to put in a more effective ban where she can go back and get that funding every year according to federal statute. So huge win for the community and for the water. And I think, you know, it's been, we've had drought conditions, so that affects water clarity, certainty, but we have already seen clearer waters because of that. And of course, over time, if we're able to do even more to protect our shorelines, prevent erosion, we're going to see that water clarity result in more seagrass, more oyster reefs, and really just a rebound of some of our habitat. That's not the only issue affecting water clarity and sediment, to be clear. There's plenty, plenty more work to do, but a big win for the community in that area. So that's one that I'd point to. The others, I would say, kind of remain in flux. Issues like the coal ash pond that sits along the side of the Mobile River. And then one that we went backwards on, I would say, is this past legislative session, this bill, it was known as Senate Bill 71, it rolled back our toxics regulations. So if those of you that don't know, industry that has waste that contains no carcinogens or other toxic materials that are known to harm our health, they're permitted to allow a certain amount to go into our waters as they dispose of that waste, the idea being that the dilution is the solution there. Well, for some reason in this past legislative session, our state decided to give our power to make our rules for those toxics to the federal government. And the law says that we can't make laws stronger than the federal government when it comes to toxics regulations, which, you know, how a state, you know, all the conservative groups opposed it because it's a state's rights issue, but we still decided to do that. And then where there's not a federal law, you're not allowed to use risk-based factors in making the law. You have to prove direct bodily harm, which is near impossible unless you're willing to spend millions of dollars for every disease that we have. So that is a step backwards for us as a community. We've not yet seen the results of that yet either. We don't know whose permits have changed based on that law, but we do know that it will affect the amount of toxics that we all interact with, especially if you like to eat the fish that you catch. They're getting all that stuff in the food chain. So anyway, yeah. Sean, there's kind of an overview of what's going on with our waters.
Yeah, and I would have picked that apart. And then, you know, I could always make my joke about, well, you get enough mercury in the bass. The nice thing is, you know, once they warm up some, it goes from being, you know, a 15-inch bass to a 18-inch bass, but mercury expended. But and this, you know, not on brand for the state of Alabama to say we'll do nothing more. We'll let the feds control something. That's not on brand for Alabama. I don't know if y'all have looked around, but saying we're going to hand this over to the feds. We're not going to do anything that the feds don't, you know, make a regulation on. That's it's not very Alabama.
No, it's confusing for those of us that are used to Alabama not wanting the federal government to have control, and then especially those of us that like to hunt and fish and go, we also don't want toxics entering our bodies through the things that we kill or catch and eat. And so, yeah, it's not on brand. And there's this kind of infamous quote where on the floor during the debate, the sponsor of that bill was asked, who wants this? And he wasn't willing to share who wants this bill to happen. And so I think we can imagine some powerful entities that may have something to gain from being allowed to put more toxics in our waterways.
For sure. That we could talk about, you know, what happened with the PSC bill. That's a whole other world of what happens in Montgomery. But before we do that, I want to get update on a couple things here. We'll start with a shorter one, I think, and then we'll come back. We'll do coal ash after we go to the news. But the living shoreline discussion, I don't know if it's ever been quantified, but you talk about the seagrasses, the oyster beds, shoreline. I've always thought of it, if we can get, you know what, if you crank that boat motor, if I pull on the old 15 Johnson and get it to crank, I had to do some energy to get it there. But once I start it, right, it runs. Is there a number of, you know, acres, miles, anything to where, because the way I understand it, if we can get enough, if we can help it, human beings can help nature enough to get this seagrass back, these oysters back, it will take over on its own and start mending itself and growing those shorelines, right?
Absolutely. I don't have that information here in front of me, but, you know, let me come back here in a couple of weeks and I'll bring you some data, particularly on the oysters, where there's this point in which we have enough oysters producing reproductive material that they can replenish themselves. There is a number that exists or a ballpark there. But the sad thing is I do know we're nowhere close to that number. So we've got to continue to invest in our oyster reefs. And of course, Baykeeper has our program where, we're growing. Last year, we did about 260,000 oysters restored back onto reefs and in areas where we know they have better chance of surviving in the protected intertidal marsh areas. And then this year, we're hoping to do close to 1 million. Our goal is 500,000, but we're having a really good year, and so it will be great. But our goal is to be able to do about 10 million a year by 2030. And so we're on that path, and that's the point. That 10 million number is the one where if we do this year after year, we'll reach that point where they can replenish themselves. The living shoreline side, it's going to require some human intervention. It's going to require homeowners deciding, you know what, I'll pay a little more now. Rather than coming back and fixing my bulkhead that's eroded, let's pay a little more now. In fact, it'll improve your quality of life. You'll have more fish. You'll be able to have a pocket beach that your family can play on, things like that. But you won't have to do as much maintenance over time. And what that's going to do is slow down the wave energy that's coming in and eroding our shorelines. A lot of it from these big ships or big storms. You see it both sides of the bay. And so although a little bit more expensive on the upfront cost, long-term it's a better investment for your property. It's really a great investment for all of our waters. And so that's where I think there will be some elected officials interested in sweetening the deal for homeowners, right, property owners. You know, hey, this is a benefit to all of us, so we're willing to put a little bit of our state money towards it to have a public-private cost share. And that's really what we're after, and something that everybody can expect next legislative session is, I hope, have some sponsors pushing a bill like that.
Yeah, I mean, just from the maybe even a tax abatement, if you do this, you know, it helps you on that side. We're coming right back. More with Executive Director at Mobile Baykeeper, William Strickland. Your questions at the text line, 251-343-0106.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
at 125 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. 10-yard conversation with my buddy William Strickland, Mobile Baykeeper. And, you know, I asked you about Living Shoreline. I want to obviously talk about that. But in addition, because I, you know, hope we do tax abatements for people doing things that are better for everybody, right? So you do a tax abatement. People get to do the Living Shoreline, take out the bulkhead. Then it's less public dollars spent on mitigating erosion and turbidity in the water, and everybody wins.
That's right. And somebody smarter than me will figure out the actual legislation that gets it to where it's more affordable for the property owner. But you're exactly right. We've used our tax dollars for public benefit, our roads, our hospitals, our businesses even that come in, although I know not everybody's happy about the subsidizing of industry at times. And that's what ought to be done here, is that if you want to do something that's going to benefit everybody, there ought to be some way for the state to pay for the benefit that they're getting. And then I know I'm going to enjoy it, get out there and catch speckled trout on somebody's living shoreline. They've got some wave breaks under the water, some oyster reef potentially, and then I'll be out there catching more fish.
Yeah, I like that for sure. All right, on coal ash, and I had a long, drawn-out question, but I'll just take Chris in Orange Beach's question first, and then I probably will get in by long, drawn-out stuff. Chris says, this is a yes or no question. Are we going to get rid of the coal ash?
Yes is the answer. I'll expand. You know, it's inevitable. Everybody knows that this is a terrible idea to leave something like this along the river. The power company has said themselves, we'd like to recycle all of it if we can. And so it's going to happen, but obviously we're seeing it's not going to happen without pain. And so what you can do is go on our website and go to the coal ash page, and you can write the CEO of Alabama Power directly and say, hey, you say you want to recycle all of this coal ash. What we're asking for is for you to put that in a legally binding agreement that we know it's going to happen. And I'll add, you may have seen the coal ash regulations are being rolled back at the federal level, and I'm no fan of that, but I will say that there's a benefit potentially to Plant Berry. The things that they're suggesting rolling back is the timeline. And one of the excuses we've been hearing from the power company is that we'd like to recycle all of it or remove it, but we don't think they'll give us enough time. Well, if they're moving that timeline back, it kind of removes that excuse, doesn't it? Other places have removed and recycled 100% of their coal ash. In fact, the majority of coal ash ponds in America, and every state in the Southeast, is removing the majority of their coal ash except for Alabama. And so with a deadline extension, that's the perfect reason to come back with a new permit, put a legally binding agreement in place where we can see 100% of that coal ash removed or recycled there alongside the Mobile River. So the answer is yes.
Yes,
but
okay.
I wanted to give you my reason.
Okay, so there you go, Chris. It is a yes. It is, but it's, so the argument before was, well, we don't have enough time to get it done. But if it's in violation, then you have to get it. Yeah, and there's a difference, obviously, between the EPA and ADEM, but you know, there's been judgments come down on that. I mean, right? I mean,
there certainly has. And for those of you that don't know, we are currently in litigation with Alabama Power on this issue and waiting to hear from a judge about whether or not we will go to trial on this specific plant. But I will say that even without the deadline extension that we're seeing during these rollbacks of the regulation, there are many examples where the EPA has granted extensions for folks that want to do the right thing. And so it's a simple request. If you guys are saying you want to recycle 100% of the coal ash, then put a legally binding agreement in place, a permit, something that says this is guaranteed to happen, it's enforceable, and then everybody will say, yes, 100% of the coal ash will be removed and recycled. And then our answer will be yes, and here's how it's going to happen, instead of yes, so here are how it ought to happen.
Very good. We'll come back. We'll pick up this conversation when we return. More from William Strickland, Mobile Baykeeper. You can check out more online. We will talk about the website. We'll also talk about the swim report. This time of year, starting to get back in the water. Swim report, pretty clutch. We'll be right back. 9:35, FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along and a good time. And twice in a day, I get to talk to my buddy David McCurry. Saw him in person earlier, and I get to talk to him on the telephone. What's happening at LCM?
It's raining. But other than that, we've got some new inventory on the way in. We got a really nice 2019 Ford Explorer Sport package. Cummins gray with black leather. We got a 17 Nissan Titan SL on the way. We got a Toyota RAV4 Hybrid XLE, which is going to have all the equipment. Another Ram Bighorn truck. And a 22 Ford F-150 XLT, and that is a good-looking joker, that 22 F-150. Should be here probably tomorrow.
You, I like, too. I was looking at a truck with you today, and we talk about that being able to scan. Now, you'll send all the information. Somebody calls you or comes out, all the information on a vehicle. But if we want to just, if we're out there on the lot, we see something we like, there's a QR code you can scan and get all that right there on your phone.
Yeah, it takes you directly to that page on the website where you can view all the pictures of the vehicle. You can view all the specs, you know, what engine's in it, depending on what kind of vehicle it is. It may be a transmission, what kind of transmission it's got in it. It also shows you the Carfax. There's just a lot of neat information that populates when you use that QR code.
Okay, well, tell folks how to find you and go scan a QR code when they're there.
We're at Highway 90 in Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. We're at the third red light on the left-hand side. You can give us a call at 251-375-0068, or like we were talking about, go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com.
Hey, thanks, David.
All right, buddy. Have a good day.
You too. Checking in with David McCurry at LCM Motor Cars. Continue our conversation with Executive Director at Mobile Baykeeper, William Strickland. You know, William, I'm going to read this one. This is good. This will be a good transition. Although I do want to, you know what? No, I'm going to save it for a second because I had one more question for you on coal ash. We had talked previously that sampling of the water there in the Mobile River at Berry Steam Plant had levels of pollutants. Because I was, you know, we talk about chronic or acute, you know, acute breach or something, but the levels were at maybe Kingston levels in the Mobile River right there without a breach.
Yeah, they were at or higher in some places than levels found in Kingston. For those of you that don't know, Kingston is one of the worst environmental disasters in our nation's history, where millions of tons of coal ash spilled into a river system and into a swamp system that took billions of dollars of cleanup. And so we're seeing higher levels without a breach along the Mobile River in some places than we saw there in Kingston.
Now, how's that not a red alert? How does that not mean... To me, that's the biggest fulcrum on this motivator is we already have that pollution happening. Get it out.
Yeah, I think it is a red alert for most people. But I think, again, we're dealing with something political in an area where you've got a large company that doesn't seem to want to make a change. And so it's going to be up to us raising our voices and having our elected officials work for us. And our agency leaders, those that are appointed by our elected officials, to say we're going to do what we're going to serve the people rather than a single entity.
Okay. And transition here. I'm not going to read all Michael's text here, Michael. But he just said, if Baykeeper cancels a swim report, who's going to keep us updated on? And he used some funny ways to talk about sewage getting in the water every time it rains in Fairhope. So what's going on with this? You've got the pause for the swim guide out there. What? Why?
Yeah, so... over the years, our swim guide has been funded for folks that specifically wanted to fund that program. And over the last several years, that funding has dwindled. Folks that were once willing to designate towards the program have gone away. So what we've been doing is using our general fund to keep the program going, keep the staff that's in place to manage the volunteers that do the sampling, that process the samples in our lab, to handle the communications to where you guys can know what's going on and answer any questions that you might have. We're no longer able to do that from our general fund like we have been because there's so many pollution issues that we're trying to fix. So in order for us to continue to actually clean up some of these sewage, and we are working on that specifically, and we are continuing to do testing, just not in areas where it's necessarily popular to swim as we figure out where the bacteria is coming from, we're going to have to pause the program until we're able to build back up multi-year commitments of people that are saying, no, this is important to us and we're willing to fund this program so the folks can know where it's safe to swim. I will add, though, our state does already do some testing, and you can find it on their website. The Department of Public Health and the Department of Environmental Management do some testing. I will say it's maybe not as easily accessible as what we're producing for folks, and we do know that our program is valuable. We want to bring it back. But if you're looking for it, you can go to their websites, and I believe download a PDF that happens not necessarily weekly, but something close to that to be able to get some information.
Well, but, yeah, that's why I think it needs to be at a faster pace because, you know, if it's rains on Thursday and we're going to go swimming on Saturday. You know what I'm saying? I need to know
you're preaching to the choir there, Sean. And I will say a couple more things. There is that's certainly a service that we want to provide. However, I think it's something we all got to think about. You know, is this something really that should be done by a private entity, or should the towns that we live in, the counties that we live in, step at and be able to provide that service? And honestly, I don't have an answer to that. I'm no fan of big government, but I want to provide that service. But when you do that, you are reliant on what people find valuable. And so right now what we're seeing is that there hasn't been folks seeing the value in it enough to be willing to pay for it.
Maybe we wake some of them up to this, because to me it is a valuable resource. I mean, if there's something you important, you can put your kids in the water, yourself in the water, knowing that it's okay to get in there, it's not chock-a-block full of E. coli, I think is super important.
I totally agree, and that's something that my family uses. I've got young kids, and so we do check the swim report, but I'll add some additional tips, just some common sense stuff, while the program is paused, and we do hope to bring it back. But about 24 hours after a rain event, 24 to 48, you can expect higher levels of bacteria regardless of where you are. It's just the nature of living in a populated area, and honestly, an area where we've not invested as much in our utilities as we would have liked to prevent those sewage spills and some of that infiltration where we have higher levels of bacteria coming from the outfalls. So 24 to 48 hours after a major rain event, regardless of where you are, particularly if you're in a more populated area. And then don't get in the water if you have open wounds. And every time you get in the water, do your best to shower quickly thereafter so any bacteria that does exist is not able to get into your body and make you sick.
You know, talking about these, it's been a soapbox I've been on even before 17 years ago, launching this station back when I was just a rock and roll disc jockey. My problem with the pollutant, the human-made pollutants getting in the water, and I could say something cliche like, we can get live video from Mars, but we can't solve this. But in discussions with like DCNR and with the state, and money coming, oil spill money still coming in, Restore Act money still coming in, the state has funding for these utilities if they choose, and many have, but if they choose to upgrade whatever is it a relift, is it a leaky pipe, is it that right. Makes this stuff get in the water, this crap, I'll say it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. There's a variety of different utilities, Sean. Some of them do better than others. Some of them have more capability than others. And some of them, honestly, are more interested in doing the right thing than others. And so there's varying levels of that. But I will also say, up there in Pritchard, that's a major failure. That community is suffering, but it's not just them. We're all affected when massive amounts of sewage enter Three Mile Creek or Chickasaw Creek and then the Mobile River. And that's something, as we talked about before, that it's affecting everybody, and this is an area where our state has not been willing to invest those funds. And so it's a both-and answer as usual, where that's one where I can point to say the state can do more. There are others where certainly the utility itself can choose to do more.
Okay, let's talk about this maybe broader view here, because we'll hear there'll be critique out there that an environmental group like Baykeeper stands in the way of economic growth. The discussion came up a lot during the fight against the mud dumping. And so your response to that, I mean, you've said it before, but your response to that, can industry and environmental protection coexist here?
Well, I think that here in particular, it can only coexist. Our economy is healthy waterways. The reason why people want to live in Mobile and Baldwin counties is because of our natural resources. Jobs are important. We never want to stand in the way of job creation, but folks aren't going to want to live and work in places where they cannot enjoy the things that make it great. And so here our economy is based on healthy water. They are one and the same. And I will tell you, as an organization, we always want to work with whatever industry group is there. And we find that the majority of them do want to do the right thing. And they want to do the right thing while working with us to have the biggest economic impact as possible. The ones that you read about in the newspaper are the areas where we couldn't find agreement, which is more rare than people might think. So I do think it's important that people understand that.
Okay. And as we close here, is there something we haven't talked about? Is there an overlooked issue out there? Yeah, we focus on sewage and mud dumping at shorelines and coal ash. Is there something else on your radar? Are those, you know, or do those dominate the discussion?
Well, those are certainly have been dominating the discussion. There's issues that we haven't talked about, but I will say for your listeners, we will be producing a scorecard on how our elected officials voted in this last session as it relates to water quality issues. That's something I would suggest if you're not following us on Facebook or you're not subscribed to our email, you should do that. We're going to be putting that out here in the next week. I'd love to come back on the show and go through it with you because I think this is one thing that we as a community have to understand is that these people work for us. And so we get to decide if they're actually representing doing what we want by our votes. And so being able to look at their performance on the things that we really care about is really important for a democracy. And that's something that I'd love to come on the show and talk with everybody about.
Sounds good. So we'll book it as soon as that's out. William Strickland, thank you for your time. Thanks for being on with us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. There he goes. Yeah, get him back in for the scorecard very, very soon. Coming right back after the news, your calls and text, 251-343-0106. Plus, you saw this nappy voting opens this afternoon. So, vote early and often. No redistricting in the nappy voting. It's all the same districts as always.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 152, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Time to check in with the professor, my friend Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Start off, lead off batter here, price of gold right now. Ron, what are you thinking here with the trend over the last month and then looking here in May?
It's actually doing pretty well, I think, considering the war over in Iran. If that stuff would become settled, usually the stock market and gold, silver, platinum, palladium market, all the precious metals should rebound. It just during the times of war, a lot of people tend to sit on their cash instead of trading. So it affects, you know, not only stocks, but bullion. But we've seen a lot of more activity since the ceasefire, a lot more people getting back into it. So it's starting to drive the prices back up. So still a great time to add to your stack, though, Sean.
Absolutely. Also, something I've been talking to Anna about the throughout this week and last week, Mother's Day coming up on Sunday. Also, we got graduation gifts. But, I mean, this is gift season as well here in May.
Oh, yeah. And Anna has lots of items available for Mother's Day. She was selling, I think it was a pendant. She literally sold about 10 minutes ago. Was that a pendant? Yeah, she sold a set of pendant earrings and the whole nine yards. So a lot of different ideas, anywhere from $20 to, you know, sky's the limit. But most people on Mother's Day aren't spending crazy money. So it's even youngsters can come in and get something that's very affordable and nice.
All right. Tell folks how to find you.
We're located at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. They can call us at the shop at 251-725-1590 or check us on the web at mobilebaycoins.com.
Hey, thank you, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean.
All right, there goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Let's get some text read here. Let me go back in time. Let's see. We have to go. Yeah, let's see. Squirrel said 7 minutes of speaking is short for a councilman, Councilman Corey Penn. Penn is a dunce out of his league, just copying what the paranoid race hustlers are saying. Penn only is in that position and having received votes from white voters, too, because Fred Richardson went for mayor and Herman Thomas was the competition. Haywood says Ted Turner lived a full life. Appreciate him for just for giving me wrestling shows that me and one of my grandmothers would watch and Braves games. Texter says the only problem with being Ted Turner is that you have to deal with Jane Fonda. That's from Steve. Yeah, but then that ended, right? And maybe he realized that himself. Ella said, random thought about Ted. Not sure if you've been around Thomasville, Georgia, and seen the quail plantation maps that are hand-colored, but you could and can always pick out Ted's plantation and its boundaries. They would always expand every year when the maps were updated. The map lover and you would enjoy the map. Kevin's has them available. And I think I've seen a picture of that map before, Ella. And, yeah, that's Kevin's in Tallahassee, right? The fine guns and sporting good place. I used to get their catalog. I would love that map. I do love maps, and maps of quail plantations are great. All right, first-time text from an unnamed texter. This, I guess, while I was talking to William. This dude's full of crap, just like a Democrat. Please, person, please fill out the rest of your thoughts there. Full of crap about what? Are you trying to keep the Bay from being full of crap? What? Please expand on that. Please let me know on the text line. What exactly you're going with there. Let's see. Unnamed texter said, you were speaking of Ted Turner in Vermejo out in New Mexico. I have been fortunate enough to stay at Vermejo 5 times over the last few years. By the way, I'm jealous. One of the most beautiful places in America. His restoration has been incredible. Oh, this is Robert. Thank you, Robert. Listening in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And you do have listeners in Mississippi. Well, I do, but I'm glad to know that you're there, Robert. Yeah, I looked at the pictures forever, and then a very, very good friend of mine and his wife went out there, and they regaled me with the tales of Vermejo, and I was like, man, that's now on my list. Moz said, Ted Turner's politics aside, he was a very nice man. When I was in the Braves organization from 86 to 92, he would always come down to West Palm Beach in spring training. He saw my DU sticker on my truck, and he would always spend a few minutes talking about waterfowl hunting and conservation. It's very cool. And my buddies I just told you about, Moz, that went out there, they were fishing some on Vermejo and came up to one of the lakes there on Vermejo, and there's a man pulling a boat up out of the lake, and they went to help the guy out, the older guy. Turns out it was Ted Turner. I got to help him pull the boat up and visit with him for a second. Let's see. Jason said, between the Baykeeper guy and Cameron, I've reached my scare tactic limit for the day and don't have to watch Fox News tonight. Yes. Well, if you could only... I don't know how much of the evening programming is not about scaring you on any cable news. Let's see. Gene says, how about testing around McDuffie Island? Yeah, Gene, I think Swim Report is about E. coli and those kind of pollutants, not like industrial. It's like people pollutants. C.B. Carl, I'm not going to read all this, C.B. Carl, because that's exactly what Michael said. So you are correct. I'm not going to read that on the air. Not that it's cursing. It's just, it's nasty. But said, I remember when the people on the Eastern Shore got busted for having toilets on their piers that dumped straight into the bay. Yeah, I remember I forget the details of it, though. When was that? You keep the stuff out of the water. You know what? Here's the thing. If there was only about, 5,000 of us here, you could be really dirty with that stuff, and it gets out in the wash. But the difference is, there's not, and there's so many people, and it is not exciting to talk about the politicians aren't going to hold a big rally and ribbon cutting and stuff, but quality of life things, we talk about roadways and the very important and schools, also keeping sewage out of the water. I put that on the list because that's what makes it great to live here, right? So many things have to deal with the water, whether it's the food we eat, the recreation. I mean, this is why we live here. Well, thank you, Rita said, make FM Talk 106.5 great again in the nappies. That's Rita. Thank you. And Rita, I'm happy to say that coming from the Secretary of State's office, there's no redistricting that will affect the votes in the nappies. I think they open up at 3 or 4 this afternoon. Go to the media section. It is great as always to look at the areas in media, the best whatevers in media, and know that so many of us here at the same radio station are competing against each other. Problem? No. Makes me proud. But make sure you vote and vote often. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Talk to y'all tomorrow at noon.